Ready! World class!
Do not scratch your eyes!
This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
What is up? Happy Soccer Podcast Day. I am not Bone. I am Beam. Boner is vacationing out in Seattle this week because we all know he's a diehard Seattle Sounders fan. We got a fun show lined up for you this week. It'll be a fantastic time. Premier League season getting underway. We had the crew with a big win over the weekend. First win of the season against a playoff team against NYCFC. It'll be a fantastic time. We also have, I'll run over the scores for you here in a little bit, a diehard Manchester United fan. Big crew fan, crew journalist as well. Patrick Murphy, he's going to join the program. We'll talk about the crew a little bit with Pat, and then we will pick his brain on one of the best-run organization in all of sports, Manchester United, and what he thinks about the season, and also what else is going on in the rest of the Premier League. We had a week number one, match week number one last week in England to kick things off, which was fantastic. Well, not for me personally, but it was pretty good. It was great. Anytime you get soccer back, now you got it over here in the States and, of course, across the pond getting fired up as well. So we got a fun show lined up for you today. Again, going to check in with Patrick Murphy here in a little bit. Also, Barcelona continue to be absolute criminals, and now they decided Frankie de Jong is a criminal as well. So they're just going to mix him in with the whole bunch here and want him to revert to his contract. So we'll see how that all plans out. And oh yeah, FIFA, by the way, Qatar World Cup coming up here in November. They're changing some things if they only had 12 years to decide what they needed to do with their schedule. But anyways, we're going to start off with the crew, then we'll move to a bit of English stuff, and then we'll check in with Patrick Murphy. Get a massive report, diehard Manchester United fans, try to figure out their problems with Pat here a little bit later on. Crew, over the weekend, good weekend for them. They had not yet beaten a team that had been in the playoffs all year, and they finally got that little monkey off of their back. And who else to do it other than, of course, Cucho Hernandez and Lucas Celarayán. That's right. So the crew go into this game feeling okay about themselves. Not really, because they had a disaster of a midweek the week leading up to that. I know Bone and I checked in, talked a little bit about that last week on our big Premier League preview. It was 2-1. They lost last week, August 3rd, against Montreal. Not a great effort. They had a lightning delay, and then all of a sudden, Kai Kamara, of course, our friendly nemesis, he scores in the 88th minute. Waterman scores in the 94th, and you lost that game, ripping defeat away from the jaws of victory. It's been a wild ride for the last month of the crew. Obviously, Cucho Hernandez getting introduced, coming in like a wrecking ball in MLS. It's been great to see Cucho, and he found his form, found his footing pretty earlier on Saturday at the Death Star, the LDC, the dot, whatever you want to call it. Scoring the 20th minute. Now, the crew didn't start off great. They gave up an own goal in the first 3 minutes of the game. So anytime you're down that early, not a fantastic start to your night, but no, it's okay. Lucas Celarayán had different ideas. He scores in the 27th minute. Great, fantastic finish out of Lucas. I don't think anybody in Columbus is surprised. That guy is absolutely world-class, and he continues to mesmerize. Now, that wasn't the last of Lucas, because the crew gave up yet another goal in the 64th minute, which then tied. All right, all the bad thoughts come flooding back in. How are you going to give this game away at home? Well, Lucas continues to put the team on his back. He scores in the 75th minute, and then there you go. The crew off to a victory after sealing out what was a decently stressful last few minutes in that game. So as of right now, Soccer Podcast Day, this is Thursday, August 11th. Now, the crew this weekend, we'll get into that here in a little bit. As of right now, the crew sitting on 23 games played, 33 points. They are 4 points behind and a game in hand over the New York Red Bull. Now, Red Bull sit on 37 points. Crew sit on 33 points, so you're 4 points behind them in the standings. Montreal, who you lost to in heartbreaking fashion last week, they're at 40 points. They're in third. New York, who you just beat, New York City, that is, they're on 42 points. And then Philly leading the East right now with 45 points. So the crew coming up here this weekend, big road game, going to get to go to Denver, Colorado, in which you'll take on Jassy Zardes and the Colorado Avalanche. Jassy, by the way, scoring a hat trick in his last game. So tons of Tam and Gam coming back for sure as he's hitting his contract accelerator. So a big one on tap, little West Coast swing here for the crew again as they're in Colorado coming up here on Saturday evening. Then after that for the crew, home against Atlanta, and then August 27th, which is a Saturday at 7:30, you travel down to the banks of the Ohio River. Bone will say it's in Kentucky, and so will I, because he's not here this week. You get to take on FC Cincinnati, which should be a fantastic game. Again, August 27th. Those are your next few games for the Columbus Crew. Again, we'll get into a little bit more of the crew stuff here in a few minutes' time when we check in with Patrick Murphy. I was pretty excited last week. I was getting back from vacation and everything was all good. You had the proverbial kickoff game to the English season, which is always one of my favorite times of the year because you do get this great merry-over of MLS stuff going on, and then the European leagues again start up, which is great. So you had the kickoff game this year. It was Crystal Palace against Arsenal. Arsenal taking care of business 2-0. Okay, pretty good for them. I'll go over your table after we get everything done. Newly promoted Fulham. This is for all the Liverpool fans out there. Newly promoted Fulham and their dry grass that Jurgen Klopp is complaining about stunningly draw Liverpool at home in the early game on Saturday. Not exactly the way that they wanted the season to start off up there in Liverpool. Again, Jurgen Klopp, he's a baby. He cries about everything. And that's not me doing any disservice to Jurgen Klopp. I think he's a fantastic manager, and I'm very jealous that Liverpool has him, but still complaining about the grass. By the way, Fulham did have a great, great troll tweet about that the next day where they play at in Craven Cottage. They tweeted out a picture of their field being watered and said, "What lush grass we have here," which I thought was an unbelievable troll job out of them. So Fulham shockingly draw Liverpool 2-2. Should have gotten a full 3 points out of this, but fortunately for Liverpool fans, Mo Salah saving a point at the death for them in the 80th minute. They were unable to get the push through. So 2-2 draw. Bournemouth take down Aston Villa, 2-0, newly promoted team. That happened on Saturday. Newcastle treating Nottingham Forest. Sorry for the Forest fans. The supporters group that was newly founded here in Columbus. After their 25-year run, not back in the top flight. Their first game, not fantastic. They get beat by Newcastle 2-0. So Tottenham beats Southampton 4-1. A fantastic day for them, man. They were just doing whatever they wanted to against Southampton. Ryan Sessegnon on the far post, and then Kulusevski on the far post as well. Literally mirroring images of goals for that one. So fantastic result for Tottenham as they get their season underway with 3 points. Leeds, T-Bone's team. How about this? Brendan Aaronson likely should have scored a goal. It was counted as an own goal, but for all intents and purposes, we're going to say that he started off with a goal. So Jesse Marsh, American hero, managing Leeds United, they get off flying with a 3-point start to their season. Good job out of them. They take down Wolves 2-1. Chelsea take down Everton 1-0. Raheem Sterling making his debut, in which Raheem Sterling got into a position that was very wacky. I'm sure if you're on Twitter, on social media, or anything, you have seen what that video of Raheem Sterling bending down to the ground. Anyways, Chelsea, they win 1-0. Jorginho with a penalty in the first half of that game. They had a ton of extra time. I think they had 10 minutes of extra time in the second half, and then like 10 minutes in the first half as well. So Jorginho getting off for the Blues, starting that. Then you move to Sunday's game. Leicester and Brentford tie 2-2. You had City, in which Erling Haaland looked amazing. I know one was a penalty. Doesn't matter. Bone and I went round and round and round about our expectations for Erling Haaland and what he is going to do for this team this year. I said baseline 25 goals for him this year, and that actually might be light because Erling Haaland, in his debut for Manchester City, scored not one but a pair of goals for City. They already look like a wrecking ball of a crew, in which I'm sure everybody's very excited about it, even including myself. So if you're asking yourself, well, Brandon, that was the late game on Sunday. What about the early game, the midday game on Sunday? Well, fear not, my friends. I'll get to that. Manchester United, starting off the season, Erik ten Hag, great new manager. He comes over from Ajax. Of course, they look great in the preseason. They win a meaningless game against Liverpool. They're looking great. Marcus Rashford, he's back on form. Jadon Sancho, what's he going to do? Oh, yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, he's on the matchday roster. Maybe, just maybe, they have salvaged that situation. Well, good news for literally everybody else out there, except for us Manchester United fans. United go down at home in Erik ten Hag's debut, 2-1 against the mighty Brighton Hove in Albion. 2-1 loss at home. Pascal Gross scores in the 30th and 39th minute, and there you go. So United off to a rip-roaring start. Again, we're going to check in with Pat Murphy, really assess the situation for them as we get rolling here. If you're asking yourself, well, what does that mean for the table? Who is going to take over Champions League this year? If the season were to end today, which it's not, thankfully you got 37 more weeks of this. Tottenham currently in first, 3 points. Of course, winning 4-1 over the weekend. They have a goal differential of 3. They are number one in the table. Bournemouth in second right now with a 2-0 win. They have a goal differential of 2. They're sitting in second. Arsenal and City both sitting in third and fourth. And then, of course, Newcastle, Brighton, Leeds, and Chelsea all with 3 points as well. Your team's on 1 point. Only had 2 draws over the weekend. Brentford, Fulham, Leicester, and Liverpool all with 1 point as well. All those teams, again, drawing against each other. Liverpool sit in 12th. And then here are your big boys, the teams with 0 points throughout the first match week of the season. Manchester United in 13th, which is just fantastic to see for everybody out there as I'm wearing my United hoodie today, even though it's 95 degrees in Columbus. Who really cares? United get it done in the worst way possible. They lose at home to start off their season 2-1 against Brighton. Wolves in 14th, Everton in 15th. They might be in for the big drop this year. Both teams, actually, Everton and Chelsea, did look pretty gassed. So got to get that fitness rounded into form as I sit here eating my biscuits and gravy and drinking my iced coffee that has like 900 grams of sugar in it. I'm not playing the games. I just talk about it. Aston Villa right now in 16th, Crystal Palace in 17th. Your three in relegation. Early on, again, we've got 17 weeks to go. Nottingham Forest in 18th, West Ham in 19th, Southampton lining things up with a 4-1 loss against Tottenham with a -3 goal differential. The Saints of Southampton in 20th place. Now, that's just a little bit of a primer. Of course, you got big-time games coming up this weekend, as it will throughout the entire Premier League season. But a very special friend of the program, Patrick Murphy, covers the crew for Massive Report. Also, diehard Manchester United fans. He's going to give us a little insight to the crew's playoff push. What's he expecting out of Cucho here? What's he expecting out of this team here in the last couple of weeks of the season? I believe the crew have 11 games left to go. So we'll dissect that. And also the big problems at Manchester United. We'll talk to Patrick Murphy coming up next. This is Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village.
It defies description. Now back to Bone and Beam United.
Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village, of course. I am Beam. He is not Bone, because he's not here this week. And he's a diehard Seattle Sounders fan, and that's what he's doing, enjoying soccer in the Pacific Northwest. Even though that's a big lie, I'm sure he's having a good time doing that. He'll be back next week. We're actually now joined by a very, very special guest, a friend of the program, big crew fan, also covers the team for Massive Report. You can frequently find him, too, on the weekends cheering on for his dreck of a European soccer team, in which him and I share the same interests in that, down at Zaftig Italian Village. He is the one, the only, the Murph dog, Patrick Murphy. Patrick, what's going on, buddy? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. That was a much kinder introduction than I probably needed, but thank you for that. Hopefully the United side of things turn around as the crew side of things have gone pretty well lately.
Well, you know, hope is not a strategy, Pat, but we will be at Zaftig every single game, probably drinking in our wallows and wallowing away in misery while we're watching that team. So anyways, we're going to put a pin in that. We'll come back to United and the problems that they're facing and how one Patrick Murphy would fix their teams. But Pat, it was the first time all year which the crew had beaten a playoff team, this one coming at home this past weekend over at the Death Star. They get things done 3-2 over New York City. It's great, right? I mean, because you don't want to sit here again and do this whole song and dance of dropping points like you did last week in the midweek to Montreal, where you gave up 2 goals near the game, which should have been 3 points, should have been 1 point, turned into 0 points. For you, I guess you start looking at this team and what Caleb has done, what he did last year, and this team winning MLS Cup in 2020, not making the playoffs last year, not being able to get critical points when you needed them the most, and then peaking at the end of the season. This team firmly in playoff contention. As of today, they sit in fifth. They are 4 points behind Red Bull with a game in hand, which I think is a pretty important detail. Just your assessment so far of this kind of mid to late summer window in which the crew are in right now.
Well, I think the hopeful crew fan was expecting this, given that the team started the season well and then and went in that big scoring slump. And I know the last time I was on with you guys, we talked about that, the lack of goals. And that was the talk from the team was, you know, we're going to go out, we're going to sign a forward, a marquee forward. And they did just that. And so it was kind of waiting for Cucho Hernandez and then seeing how it would go. And the expectation was that once he got here, once he started playing, you know, the team did their homework, that this guy would kind of be the answer to unlock the deficiencies up top. And that's certainly been the case. He's been above phenomenal. If people haven't been able to go out and see him yet, I recommend you do it, because watching him live is ridiculous. I mean, the movements and stuff that he makes on the field are something that Cruz never had in a forward. And
even just as some of his touches, Pat, like in real life, you're like, I don't know how you controlled that with so much ease, but he does that.
Absolutely. And so he's been what they needed up top. And, you know, you've seen because of that, they have been significantly better on the offensive end. I think that now it's about sustaining that. And you mentioned that game against Montreal. You know, that was just such a disappointment to be up. I think they were up since like the 14th minute, 1-0, couldn't find that second goal. And then you have this weather delay and give up two goals really late. And you could feel it coming throughout the second half. They just, it was hot and they just didn't have it. And so you needed a big bounce back on Saturday against the defending MLS Cup champions and a team that sits in second in the East, as you mentioned, the playoff team. First time all year they'd beaten one of those. You know, so I think that was the response that was required from this team. You're going to have some disappointing losses throughout the course of the season. You certainly don't like to have one like that, but you need to bounce back. And had they lost to New York, had they had a bad performance against New York, I was worried that that could have spiraled a little bit. So, you know, I was glad to see, and even in that game, you know, they give up an early goal, an own goal off a deflection. They go and take the lead 2-1. And then in the second half, it gets tied on another deflection. And now it's like, okay, where's this going to go from here? And they're able to pull out a win. So that's huge. You know, in terms of the rest of the season, I'm optimistic that this team will make a run. I think anytime you get into the playoffs, it becomes a one-off. They want to have, you know, a home game, obviously. Top four is what gets you that in MLS. That makes your path a little bit easier. We can talk about 2020 and how they lucked their way into home games all the way through winning MLS Cups. So, you know, time will tell what they do once they get into the postseason, but I certainly think they're a playoff team. And from there, you know, it's just about making a run. And you know, they certainly have the talent to do that now.
Yeah, they do. As we check in with Patrick Murphy with us here, no bone again, he's vacationing in Seattle. So when you look at this team, Pat, I guess, you know, the big fear out of Crew fans would be a disappointing end of the season. Like we saw, well, I guess this was the disappointing part of the season that we were in last year. And then they kind of hit the gas pedal towards the end, but it was a little bit too little too late for them. But if you had to say one reason, and I think I probably know where you're going here, one reason to be optimistic for this team moving forward and how they're going to get that home field playoff game, and then one reason to be not so optimistic looking at it as a glass half empty, kind of give us the sides, both sides, you know, the tale of two halves, one optimistic, one pessimistic point of view as we make the push for the playoffs here.
Well, Cucho is probably the obvious.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But I will go slightly a different route and say just the combination of him and Lucas Zelarayán, just these two have instantly clicked. You know, the second game they played together against DC United, they came off the bench at halftime. At the same time, Zelarayán assisted on both Cucho's goals. And you could just tell that they had a quick chemistry. They celebrate together. I mean, they look like brothers out there and brothers that really like each other, unlike me and my brother when we were growing up. But the connection has been important for this team. I mean, you know, Cucho probably would hit the ground running regardless, but to have a kind of partner in crime there with Zelarayán, and it's helped Zelarayán's form return to what we've seen early in the season. He's now playing, you know, free and certainly has space with Cucho kind of occupying stuff in front of him. So when those two are healthy and on the field, I don't know what you do as a defense. I mean, we saw New England a few weeks ago sit back really deep and were able to stifle them. But, you know, if you get into a playoff thing, you've got to score a goal, and you can't just sit back the whole time. So that's the reason for optimism for sure. I think if we're going to be negative, they have started to give up some goals. They were the second best defensive team in the league before kind of these last six games, and then they've strangely given up goals. Now, I don't know, looking at it, the goals haven't been necessarily just terrible play all the time. I mean, Saturday, as we mentioned, two deflections. Otherwise, you pretty much shut down a really dangerous New York City attack.
Yeah, that Milos goal was weird. Like, it was a weird bounce of the ball.
Yeah, just I'm not sure what he was, you know, he kind of stepped and then put his foot out and, you know, it just crept in the goal, but I don't, you know, that's just a mistake. And you know, that's the first one. Obviously, Jonathan was doing the right things. It just, the cross hit his foot right. But, you know, I that would probably be my biggest concern, is if they've kind of slipped on defense, which is what was kind of their calling card the first half of the year before they could really score goals. But I think that they have the talent to handle that. I think it's just kind of been more of a blip on the radar. But that's the thing where, you know, if you're making these mistakes in a playoff setting, that could be the difference between a win and a loss, especially if you're on the road or something like that. So I think that would probably be the negative side.
Are you encouraged by Aloy Room's play? I mean, it was, I know he had the two obviously bad breaks this past weekend, but it does seem, because we went through a thing with Aloy where he looked a little bit disinterested and he was giving up goals that he probably shouldn't, or a couple of years ago where that would be an easy stop for him. At least for me, Pat, you know, from the outside looking in, and I'm not in training every day watching him and seeing what's going through that, like, he looks a little bit more reinvigorated, and he was pretty damn good on Saturday.
He was, and I've always thought Aloy's good. I think, you know, it came out this year when the players union releases these salaries that are sometimes accurate, sometimes not, from my understanding, that he's the highest paid goalkeeper in the league. And I think fans got a little up in arms about that, because you're right, at that point there were some plays that hadn't been great. I mean, very specifically when they played Philadelphia on the road this year, a couple minutes in, he dropped the ball into his own goal, and that was the difference in the game. But, you know, I think what Aloy does best is he's a shot stopper. And, you know, maybe some of the other parts of his game could still use some work, his distribution, coming out on crosses, things like that. But in MLS, you know, you often don't have a goalkeeper that's fully rounded. I mean, they were fortunate to have Zach Steffen before this, but when you have a guy like that, he usually ends up back in Europe. So I think Aloy is what they need. You know, you'd love to see a little bit more on some of those things I mentioned, but he kind of is what he is at this point. And the main job for him is to keep the ball out of the back of the net. And I think he's done that very well for the most part. You know, I mean, again, there are a few things you can point to, but I think that's true for any goalkeeper. There's going to be some mistakes. So I'm very happy with how he's playing right now. I think that it's hard to argue with his performances of late, even though there have been some balls in the back of the net. And, you know, I think that, you're right, he does look like a motivated guy for whatever reason. Not that I think he wasn't earlier. You're right. I think there's been some sort of fire lit underneath him.
You know, so we talk about this, and I think I'm probably, you know, person number one in the line of this. Like, I've criticized Caleb a lot here on this show, talking about maybe the lack of creativity and saying, well, you know, I'm not out on the field, I'm not making the passes, guys are in the right position, they just aren't finishing their chances. Have you noticed at all, I guess, the malleability of Caleb in his system? Like, what's changed to you watching it with a keen soccer eye since Cucho has come over here? So obviously, I mean, you add a player like that, you expect the goals to come. They've come at an alarming rate for the Crew. Have you noticed any tweaks or anything in the system, Pat, that has gotten this team into better positions to actually put the ball in the net?
Well, I think the major tweaks were what we saw before Cucho got here, and how they adjusted to being a team that wasn't scoring goals and kind of grinding out results. You know, we saw switches in formation. They played 4-3-3. They played three in the back. They figured out, you know, if we have Aiden Morris and Artur and Darlington Nagby as three central midfielders, we can pretty much shut down teams on the road. And that was really effective when they weren't scoring goals. Caleb has talked about that this offseason he knew that they needed to be more flexible formationally and sort of the way that they play. after last season when, you know, when Lucas goes out with injuries and they didn't have an alternative, they kept playing the same style, but they didn't have the right people in places to do so. And so I think that is certainly a positive. And he's done that before. The year that Portland beat the Crew in MLS Cup, you know, they got into the playoffs because Caleb changed the formation right before, you know, towards the end of the season and switched some things up. So Caleb's been able to do this, but he just hadn't, I don't know if he needed kind of the jolt of last year to realize that that was the shift again. But since Cucho's been here, I mean, it's been more or less straightforward. There's certainly been some tweaks. You know, I think with the way the wingers have played and just integrating Cucho so quickly, I mean, that doesn't always click like that. You've got to give some credit to the staff. Yeah, I mean, you know, new players coming in middle of the season in MLS, it doesn't always work. Now, the guy's super talented, and that certainly helps. And, you know, adding a forward is a little bit easier because, you know, you just need to learn where he wants the ball, and that can happen pretty quickly. But give them credit and give the whole staff credit for, you know, I mean, from the front office and Tim Bezbachenko and everything for finding a guy that could fit in like that, because I think that's just as important as the tactical switches you make on the field and you know, on the practice field and everything like that.
All right, so you got a big game coming up against Colorado. You're going to see a friendly face, maybe not so friendly, yeah. Coming up. Giassi Zardes coming off a hat trick. Before expectations of this game, how much Tam and Gam did we get for his goals that he's scored so far?
Yeah, he's got, what, 6 this year, I think. So they never released exactly what the performance incentives were to get that.
Score a hat trick, $15 million in Gam.
Yeah, that, I mean, he scored a hat trick in 8 minutes in the last game, so that probably helps things. We were talking when we recorded our podcast on Tuesday. If you're the Crew and you get up by a goal or two goal, yeah, get up like 2 goals in that game, do you just let Giassi score to help things along with the Tam Gam budget? But yeah, no, I mean, I think that the, you know, the way it was phrased to me was that there are performance incentives that they think Giassi will be able to achieve in Colorado. So, you know, 6 goals, I think he's got a couple of assists. Obviously, you still have plenty of games left. You know, there's probably something in there about if he helps Colorado make the playoffs, which they've, you know, won 3 of their last 4. They're starting to play a little bit better. That's a team, I think they're in 7th in the Western Conference. So certainly a possibility if that is in fact one of those, but definitely his individual performances are going to be a heavy factor. And, you know, I think when I've seen Colorado play, I'm always rooting for Giassi to score, not just for that, but because I think he's a great dude.
Sure.
And always enjoyed him here. But obviously that will not be the case Saturday unless the Crew really, really put a hurting on him before he finds the net.
Are you happy with the draw Saturday if they get a point, or are you looking for 3 coming off the big win against New York?
Yeah, I think with this situation, a draw would be fine, just given you're going to Colorado, you're playing in altitude. The team's flying out Friday morning, so you know there's a lot of different ways that you can argue about how to deal with the altitude, whether you go out ahead of time and try and get used to it, or you go out late and, you know, just try and push through. The Crew do not have a good record in Denver, probably because of the altitude more than anything. I think, you know, it's just a tough place to play because of that. And like I said, this is a team that's starting to play pretty well. They started to score more goals. I think they put 5 on the Red Bulls recently and 4 in another game this past weekend against Minnesota. So there's you know, they're not exactly a fun team to watch. They can grind out results too. But you know, they've started to find the back of the net a little bit more. So yeah, I think given all that, if you can get a draw, you know, you take that home. Certainly anytime you have to travel out west, especially a win, you know, would just be another feather in the cap, kind of a momentum builder for sure.
All right, so big game coming up, Crew against the Rapids here on Saturday. All right, so you're also a Manchester United fan. We're going to commiserate and try to fix this club together coming up next, which seems to be a pretty big list, but we'll do that with Pat coming up next. This is Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village.
What a moment!
Now back to Bone and Beam United.
Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village. So in the last segment, we checked in with Patrick Murphy, tucking in all things Columbus Crew, expectations for this last stretch run of the season. Now a team which has a great pedigree and a great history, but it also has been very disappointing for the better part of the last decade. Now, they stink. So this is a Manchester United segment. So if you're a United fan, probably turn it off. If you're any other fan of a team in the Premier League or just hate Manchester United, probably keep it on because Pat and I are going to try to fix. So we went to Zaftig Italian Village, which is our home supporters group, Pat. And we went there, and it was a nice 9 a.m. kickoff. Place was packed. It was a very good turnout that we had. So if you're a United fan, you can come out and drink beer with Pat and I and watch these games. Expectations for the season. Erik ten Hag, he comes over from Ajax. They don't make really any signings during the offseason, during the transfer window. Cristiano Ronaldo wants out. They're keeping their hat and their eye on Frankie de Jong, who has adamantly said, I don't want to join your club, even though the clubs between United and Barcelona have come to an agreement in principle. That's a player who doesn't want to move. Anyways, we went into this game stupidly thinking against Brighton that, okay, 3 points, sure, Erik ten Hag, it's going to be great, it's going to be awesome. Maybe they'll surprise us. Wrong. They stink. I don't know what to do because it was a miserable game on Saturday, or I guess Sunday, for United.
Yep, pretty much. Let's just talk about that great turnout we had instead.
That's right. It was great. It was awesome.
It was nice to, yeah, and hopefully with a Saturday early afternoon kick, we'll get another one. But yeah, it was, I mean, you know, this, since we've started, maybe it's our fault, since we've started this group the beginning of last season, it's been
blame it on Joe.
More disappointing. Yeah, blame it on American Joe, not British Joe. Mm-hmm. He's doing all he can. But yeah, I mean, just, you kind of summed it up perfectly there. I mean, it was an off season where there was a lot of excitement with a new manager coming in, and you know, there's hope that they could turn things around. You know, I've always been of the thought that this was going to take time. That there's too much there. I think the second place finish 2 years ago had more to do with other teams and injuries and whatnot than it actually did with United putting things together. And, you know, then last season, obviously you sign a guy like Jadon Sancho, who was the big target three off seasons ago now. And, you know, you think that that's going to help the attack, and, you know, you lose a player in Mason Greenwood because of legal issues, and things just have kind of unraveled, and Ronaldo didn't exactly come in at a right time and fit things. So yeah, it's tough to look at this team and say, okay, here's the quick fix. I think it's going to take time. I've pointed to when Jurgen Klopp took over at Liverpool several years ago now, that team finished eighth in the Premier League. And, you know, I hope United don't drop down that far. They finished sixth last year, which was their worst season in Premier League history. But, you know, if it takes something like that, where, hey, you know, it's the results aren't coming, but we're starting to see some positive signs and things are starting to go that way, and, you know, you can make that climb that Liverpool did, I think you take that. But you just hoped that this would be a quicker, you know, maybe not this year, but yeah, you could at least get back in the top four, get Champions League, those type of things this season. And the first game did nothing to provide confidence in that way.
No, it actually did the opposite, yeah, where now you're looking at and you're saying, oh, no, you have 37 games left to go. And if this is going to be that kind of a season, then you might be in for the big drop, which surely won't happen. But that's where my mind was at this past week. And I'm like, this team's going to get relegated easily. They just don't look like anything. So I went into the season, of course, the announcement that Erik ten Hag was going to take over. I'm like, oh, it's great. Okay, perfect. Another Dutch manager. But I had a little more confidence in this one than I did Louis van Gaal when he came in. But I don't know, Pat. I mean, you look at this transfer strategy out of them. I know Erik ten Hag wants to sign Dutch players. He's familiar with them. They know his system. I get that. I understand it. You look at the players that he signed so far. It's been underwhelming, to say it at best. Now, I don't necessarily blame Erik ten Hag because I know he's not, you know, controlling the finances, you know, with the team. But I think the red flag for me went up as soon as Barcelona came to an agreement with United over Frankie de Jong, and I'll cover that a little bit later, what's going on with that and how it's criminal, what Barcelona are doing. When that happened and Frankie de Jong said, I don't want to play for you, I'm not going to join, I'm going to stay at Barcelona. And then since, it's been 6 weeks of Frankie de Jong saying, I don't want to play for you, but United still trying to keep after him. For me, immediate red flag should go up, be like, there are other midfielders in the world that can do what Frankie de Jong do for a similar price tag that would probably be interested in playing for you. You have a guy who doesn't want to come at all. He doesn't want to live in Manchester. He's basically come out and said that. And now it's just an abject failure of an offseason. From Erik ten Hag to the front office to everybody controlling contracts to everybody, it has been a miserable experience.
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest issue I've had with Ten Hag, and we don't know how it has all worked out, right? The transfer stuff, but yeah, you've summed it up well. With they've gone after these players that are either Dutch or have had Dutch connections. You know, Christian Eriksen obviously mm-hmm. has not played in Holland for a long time, but he did get his career started in the Ajax system. Lisandro Martinez played for Ten Hag at Ajax, and Malacia, I believe is how you say it. Tyrell Malacia mm-hmm. was in the left back, was in Holland last year, played against Ten Hag's team, and they obviously are going after De Jong. So my concern is that Ten Hag doesn't trust the scouts, the recruitment people at Manchester United, and has felt the need to kind of go after guys that he knows on his own, as opposed to, hey, here's the type of player I would like, go out and find that player. And, you know, you look at the successful clubs around the world, there's so much analytical stuff out there now that you can just kind of put into systems that they have, and it spits back out, you know, X amount of players that kind of fit that role. And then you obviously have to still do the visual scouting and, you know, figuring out if the player makes sense for your club in other ways. But it just doesn't seem like they've done that. He's just gone out and asked for guys that he has personal experience with, which would be fine. But the Dutch league does not always translate well to the Premier League. And, you know, I think that you're Manchester United. You should be able to handle this situation much better. And I think this just speaks to the issues that they've had. You know, the money has never been the issue. They've spent, you know, over $1 billion.
Gobs of money.
Yeah. So the money is there, and you know, they've gone out and they've agreed to the deal with Barcelona for De Jong. As you mentioned, he just doesn't want to play for United. And frankly, right now, I can understand that. You know, he's a kid that grew up a Barcelona fan, and, you know, Barcelona versus Manchester most of the year is, you know, I like Manchester a lot, but Barcelona is a really nice place. So I get it. And the fact that they haven't moved on, and I know that Ten Hag has, I guess privately it's been reported, you know, thinks that this is just the perfect player for what they want to do. But, you know, at some point you have to be like, all right, well, we need to find another perfect player, because you're just wasting the window. And we saw the midfield on Saturday, you know, again, not be good enough against a team in Brighton who has significantly less resources than United. And
who also didn't have a great transfer window and sold some of their best players and didn't bring in that many.
Yeah. And those two players that they sold were guys that they found, you know, and turned into real Premier League players. So, you know, why can a team like Brighton scout and develop, and United has been the exact opposite? And, you know, I think the rot is deeper than just let's fire the coach every few years and try again.
Yeah, so I was kind of on board. I think Ralph Rangnick fell on the sword and did take out a lot of people at United to try and fix that rot. I do honestly believe that. And his managerial skills probably weren't the best, but I do think he did take out a lot of people at United, and hopefully a brighter future. Also, I mean, we know that United and the Glazers haven't necessarily gotten along with the population of United fans all across the world. I don't know if you read this or not, but this just came out today, that there has been a floating around of a new ownership in Michael Knighton taking over United. He said in a YouTube video that came out, he said, everyone knows that we need new ownership in this football club. And he's a diehard United fan. I think he worked for him back in the 80s and the 90s. He said, that's my aim for most of these objectives. Right now we're working on the offer document. Remember, it's a hostile bid, which means the club isn't for sale. I would be thrilled if anybody other than the Glazers took over the United. I don't really care who it is, Pat. At this point, like, you've dragged this team down so bad. You've the laughingstock of international soccer. Like, you got to go. You got to sell the club, because it's a disaster right now.
That would be fantastic. The problem is this is just such a cash cow for the Glazers right now. And, you know, it funds what they do. They take out, I don't know how often the dividends come out, but it's ridiculous amounts of money. There was, you know, United fans calling for them not to do that this summer because you needed to get these transfers over the line. Why not show your support for the club by, hey, we'll defer this dividend, and, you know, you can use that money elsewhere and where it's needed. You know, I mean, to go even further, you know, I was over at Old Trafford last spring wow, it's fantastic for me to go every couple of years and see this wonderful stadium. My understanding, if you compare it to some of the other major stadiums across Europe, is it's fallen well behind. And, you know, there's issues. I've read about them, leaking roof and things like that. And, you know, while I love that it has an old feel to it, it certainly could use some upgrades. Those are things that have started to be talked about, but are long overdue. I mean, the training facility, from my understanding, is not really up to scratch of a major European club at this point. It's very, you know, very basic for what a club like this should have. I mean, you can just go down a list of things that they just haven't done at United that should have been done at a club this big that makes this much money. And then obviously the results on the field. In terms of the takeover, I'll be interested to see if they can do it. I think Jim Ratcliffe, who was involved with the bid for Chelsea, is involved. You know, he's a United fan. He even made that clear when he was going for Chelsea. And so it'll be interesting to see what this group can do. I mean, there's been a couple of these in the past, maybe not as big as this one, but, you know, I don't know how you get the Glazers to accept something like that when a club like United is making them so much money with what apparently is such little effort.
Yeah, and they're ruining the entire thing for everybody. So come drink with us in misery at Zaftig Italian Village. By the way, in 2 weeks' time, we play Liverpool, and I'm fully expecting another 5-0 ass-kicking. Like, it's on tap. That's exactly what we're doing. Buddy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for jumping on with me in replacement of the Bone Man. He'll be back next week. Looking forward to it. Excited for the playoff push here for the crew, and excited to at least get to drink a few beers with you this week. Appreciate it, Pat.
Absolutely. Hope to see some new faces out of Zaftig.
Brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village. Wrapping things up here on the podcast for this edition. Boner will be back next week. Hopefully he's enjoying his big vacation out in Seattle with the fam. Looks fantastic. No joking all aside, it does look like he's having a great time out there, getting to see all the mountains and drinking all the craft beer out there. It does look pretty good. So glad Bone's having a nice summer vacation, and he will be coming back next week. And the last couple of stories for this week, we've chronicled here on this show the Frankie de Jong saga that's going on with Barcelona, and I've staunchly said this, that what Barcelona are doing financially is criminal. But here's the kicker. In the latest report of Barcelona's finances, in which they're unable to register their 7 players who they signed in the transfer window because of Frankie de Jong and his contract, Barcelona actually accusing Frankie de Jong of being a criminal. That's right. So this came from David Ornstein of The Athletic. Here's what he wrote in his latest piece. Again, if Frankie de Jong doesn't leave the club or doesn't take reduced salary, then Barcelona can't register their players because, again, they're in a financial heap and a disaster and a mess. Whatever adjective you want to throw in there. So here's what Ornstein says. Barcelona have told Frankie de Jong that they want to annul his existing contract and return to the deal that he was on before, alleging the terms to him, given to him by the club's previous board, involved criminality and provide grounds for legal action against those involved. The Catalan side have serious financial problems. Yeah, we know that. And among the way that they're trying to improve matters is by selling De Jong or reaching an agreement with him over deferred wages. There has so far been no sign of a compromise. Frankie wants his money. He signed his contract. He is due that money. And, of course, Manchester United, which was very gracious of Pat Murphy to join us a bit earlier on the program, talk about their problems. So United sealed a bid for Frankie de Jong in July. Again, we're a month removed from that, and they still want him. So according to sources in Spain, Barcelona wrote to de Jong on July 15th, the day after Manchester United officially submitted a bid for him, claiming to have found evidence of criminal actions on behalf of the parties who signed his renewal on October 20th of 2020. It was a 2-year contract extension that leads all the way into 2026. That's reported to have reduced his salary for the 21 and 22 seasons, leaving 18 million euros on the board to be spread across the subsequent 4 next seasons. De Jong's deal was announced alongside 3 others, Gerard Piqué, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, and Clément Lenglet. And this provided to be one of the financial decisions by then-president Josep Bartomeu prior to the entire board of directors at the time stepping down from their posts. The letter sent to De Jong last month brought to inform the Dutchman that Barcelona think they're in a position to initiate criminal proceedings to establish what happened in relation to the signing of his contract and ascertain where responsibilities resides for the supposed wrongdoing. It's believed to be that Express, Barcelona's wish to rescind the deal and proceed with De Jong's career in Camp Nou under the conditions he agreed when he arrived from Ajax in 2019. You can't do that because your organization has put in an entire mess. You're in financial instability. You are literally lawbreakers. You can't go after a player and say, oh, what you did in this new contract negotiations, our finances were so bad at the time, we're going to make that invalid and say you're a criminal. You can't do that. You absolutely can't do that. And oh yeah, if you don't do that, we're going to be able to unsign these, not sign these players and register them to play in La Liga. And then all of a sudden you become a villain. They need to get things straightened away at Barcelona because it's an absolute mess. An absolute mess what they've gotten themselves into. And Frankie de Jong's right at the center of it. I don't blame Frankie either. Why would you want to go to Manchester United? They're a mess too. The latest rumors is that he could apparently sign for Chelsea and all this would go by the wayside for Barcelona. But if you're doing that to one of your players who you just signed a contract extension with a couple of years ago, and now you're saying that he's a criminal for not wanting to sign it, get a grip. Get a grip. What are you doing? And other stupid soccer news. Yeah, the FIFA World Cup that's happening this fall in Qatar. We're all very excited about that. Hopefully America makes some moves in their group and gets past to the knockout stages. Be very, very anxious to see what happens. Anyways, that doesn't put kind of on the front burner of the issues that's going on in Qatar. Bone and I have talked about that a lot over the course of time that we have done this podcast, and that's a whole different discussion for a different day. But FIFA, obviously a very corrupt organization. So they gave the World Cup to Qatar 12 years ago. All right, it's been 12 years since this has been announced. And we already should be through the World Cup at this point. Remember, they moved it because it's too hot in Qatar in the summertime, so they're going to play it in the winter, a la the November start date. So usually what happens in the World Cup is that the host country always gets to play a day first. The unveiling of the World Cup always belongs to the host country. You go back a few years ago when South Africa held it, and what a great scene that was when that happens. Obviously, this year Qatar is hosting it, so it was interesting when we were looking over the World Cup schedule because the start of the World Cup was going to have four matches. Now, usually each day in the group stages, you're going to have three matches. That one was going to be fourth. Qatar was going to be first up as the unveiling of the host nation. Well, FIFA has decided, and whoever the powers that be have decided, oh, wait, we messed something up. We need to give Qatar their own day. So here, I don't know, 3 months before the World Cup begins, FIFA has announced that they're moving Qatar's original date to start the World Cup up a day. So if you had tickets for, I think, November 10th or November 11th, whenever that was supposed to be, to go to that game, well, now you have to get there a day early because, again, we've decided within 100 days of the World Cup, an organization that has had this World Cup sold for 12 years, that we're going to move them to a different day. Anyways, pretty shocking that people make decisions in this world. It's crazy. I hope everybody has a great weekend. Crew on tap, hopefully a big 3 points. Torn between the Giassi thing. Obviously want him to see him do well. Tam and Gam coming the crew's way with every single goal that he scores. Hopefully they can keep him off the score sheet this upcoming weekend against the Colorado Rapids. Again, big thanks to Pat Murphy of Massive Report and diehard Manchester United fans. We're going to be drinking our sorrows away this weekend. I want to thank him for his time. It was very good stuff, insight on the crew. Bone will be back next week. He'll recap all of his Seattle Sounders fandom, all the beers that he drank, and everything. Thanks for listening. Hope everybody has a great week. And until next time, this is Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village.